Once again, adventurers, I welcome you back to the setting of Nightmares and Dreamscapes. You are at the gateway to everything and everywhere that matters. Here, the barriers between worlds are blurred, and all it takes is the right door, so step right through. It is currently 11:40 a.m. on April 19th, and you're listening to Dungeon Delvers, the show all about gaming and the people who make and play them. I'm your host and part-time Dungeon Master, Hannah Ward. Today's guest is Christina Van Epps, a seasoned veteran of the medium. Thank you for joining me today.
Hey, it's great to be here.
All right, so I understand that you've been playing video games and all forms of gaming for quite some time now. As I recall, would you mind elaborating on your experiences?
Yeah, sure. I started playing video games when I was like maybe 8 years old. I would watch my older sister play PlayStation, and then just when she wasn't around, steal it and play PlayStation also. But I only started playing really serious tabletop gaming until I was about like 14 in high school. It was like the most stereotypical experience. My friend Jeremy was like, "Hey, I'm running a campaign of Dungeons and Dragons. Do you want to play?" And I had never heard of it before. I had no idea what it was. And so I'm like, "Okay, sure." And we literally, it was like after high school, we'd go to his house and play Dungeons and Dragons in his basement. It was the most stereotypically D&D thing ever. Like, his mom would bring us snacks. It was great. But that was about 9 years ago. So I've been playing Dungeons and Dragons pretty much consistently since then.
All right. And because of, has, I had something I was going to say.
Don't worry.
It's kind of, because I've been told that Dungeons and Dragons is something that you have to be prepared to play. Mm-hmm. And to be honest, I don't quite agree with that. And it's not just in terms of equipment. It means, like, you have to be mentally prepared. I don't quite agree with that. I was just wondering what you thought about it.
To a certain extent, you kind of do, in the sense that you have to be... I feel like Dungeons and Dragons is super fun. It's super easy to get into, and it's super, like... I feel like, in my experience, it's very welcoming. I know not every table is that way, necessarily, but the game itself is very forgiving to new players, especially the newer edition of it. I started playing with 2.5, which was very easy, but like third edition had a lot of rules, and that was kind of difficult to get into. But if you are a person who, like, as a kid, you played make-believe, like you played house or whatever, so long as you are willing to put yourself mentally in another place and pretend to be someone else, you don't have to be ready for it. You kind of already are.
Yeah. So would you consider Dungeons & Dragons a pretty good game to introduce to non-gamers?
Oh, yeah. No, definitely. Especially because it is fairly open, in the sense that you can do whatever you want with Dungeons & Dragons. Depending on who's your DM, there's a realm of possibilities for any situation. I run two games right now, and I have had players that create solutions to problems that I never thought of. They're just like, "What if I did this?" And I'm like, "Okay, sure, try it." And then it works out. It's so open and so, like, creatively... What's the word I'm looking for? It allows players to be so creative with it. So non-players who want to get into tabletop, when they start playing a game... Obviously, with combat, there's rules and whatnot, but when they're in a situation, it's like, can I talk to that person? It's like, yeah, you can talk to that person. Can I climb that building? Yeah, you can climb that building. Do whatever you want. It's as soon as they realize that how few limitations there are in the game, it's really fun, and it's fairly immersive, I think. So it really is a good way to get people starting to have fun with tabletop.
Yeah, the sky's the limit, I guess.
Yeah.
And even then, you can go beyond the sky.
There's literally, like, people have come up with the weirdest and most creative solutions to problems that have, like, bypassed things that I've made up for them. Like, I put roadblocks in the way of my players, and they just completely ignore them. And they take a completely different path than I thought they would, because it's just so open.
All right. And I know you said that you started with 2.5.
Yes.
That's one of the more... Well, I wouldn't say it's one of the older ones, obviously, considering it's after one, and
right.
One is the first edition.
One was the first one.
So, do you have a favorite edition?
Probably, actually, this most recent one.
So, fifth?
Fifth edition is really good. I have a really big fondness for fifth edition. But I guess it's not really Dungeons & Dragons, in a sense. Have you heard of Pathfinder?
Yeah.
Yeah, Pathfinder. I love Pathfinder. There was, like, when fourth edition came out, every DM I played with hated 4th edition.
And yeah, I've heard that too. I know it's not my favorite either.
It's because it was meant to be played online, it was meant to be played in a different setting.
Yeah, I heard it was, like, they compared it to video game combat.
That was how it was supposed to be.
It's very instant gratification.
Yeah. The way that 4th edition was made, it was supposed to be, like, in with this tool set they were trying to make for online gaming so that people in different locations could play Dungeons & Dragons together online. So it was supposed to be like a Skype situation where you kinda called
like
in.
Roll 20.
Like Roll 20, exactly. You called in to your DM and then like all of the tools for what you could do and everything were in this system. So it was meant to be played online, but it didn't really translate well to actually like being at the table. It wasn't as fun. So when that came out, all of the DMs pretty much just like washed their hands of D&D and were like, we're playing Pathfinder now.
Until they at least fix it.
Yeah. Which was like, Pathfinder was like the most garbled collection of rules. It was like so complicated, but I loved it for that. I loved it for like all the weird minutiae of it. So that one is also has a fond place in my heart.
Yeah, because I've been playing tabletop for a while now, maybe 2-3 years. Not as long as you have, but
I mean, there's no like gateway of expertise. Like if you play tabletop,
you enjoy it.
Yeah, you have fun with it.
Yeah, and I've had like much like I guess your love for Pathfinder. There's a certain game I really like. It's called Strike.
Okay.
Yeah, it's very much kind. The rules there aren't that many besides like there aren't that many dice rolls as far as you only just use the 6-sided.
Mm-hmm.
But and in that way, it's a little like the 4th edition as in terms of like the video game s combat, but it also simplifies it, and I love it. There's like they have like the Scion class, which is pretty cool. I guess it's kind of like one of the new Unearthed Arcana ones.
Yeah, they've always had psionics in Dungeons and Dragons, like the mind reader class, but they're a little bit trickier to integrate because they have like a weird skill set that requires a lot of like knowing what other players are thinking and doing sort of thing.
Yeah, that's kind of metagaming, though.
A little bit, yeah.
So I always figure it's kind of hard to run, especially when I've run a campaign.
I was in a Star Trek D6 game. So it was one of those Roll 6 ones that was set in the Star Trek universe, and my character was Vulcan. So I was supposed to be able to read people's minds, and that got really confusing really quickly.
It's like, do I know about this?
It's like, do I have to roll to be able to tell what they're thinking? And then it's like, no, you actually, to the other players, had to actually, like, genuinely be honest about what they were thinking, which some people are reluctant to do because they feel like that's losing.
Yeah.
And it's sort of, you definitely have to be willing and open to win and lose in Dungeons & Dragons. Tabletop gaming. Yeah.
Yeah, so win some, lose some.
Exactly, because it's supposed to be the experience is the victory. It's like you don't have to be constantly the best person playing any tabletop game. The experience is supposed to be what's fun.
I also think it's funnier if some bad stuff happens.
Oh, man.
Bad luck is...
It's hilarious.
Yeah, especially in comedic timing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you have a good, like, situation and that it'd be... And something's funnier if it goes wrong...
It's so great. I played Shadowrun. There was a campaign of Shadowrun I did with my friends, and we were... So it's like a futuristic semi-fantasy setting, and we planned a heist. Like, part of our mission was we had to break into this building. We literally spent 4 hours planning this heist. We drew diagrams. We had, like, a list of everything we needed to have. We had plans, like, down to the minute. Like, okay, when this happens, this is gonna happen. It all went so bad. It went so bad so fast. And it was... the most hilarious thing. Like, we succeeded, we escaped, but, like, it was just a hot mess, this heist. And we had planned it so meticulously. It was hilarious when it all fell apart.
Yeah, I love and hate it when that happens. Mm-hmm. And especially, I remember this one time, I think I've told the story before, but I had this character I was really fond of. Her name was Minder, and she was a dwarf, but it was a bard. It's kind of strange, but at least
dwarf
you can
bards.
Do that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we had recently had this fight where we were in a dungeon, like a cave-like dungeon, and there was dragons in there, and we got out by the skin of our teeth. We lost someone.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh, God. And then go back to Waterdeep, and I get eaten by a dragon anyway. Yeah. Yeah. Good times.
There was a similar situation in one of my campaigns where we went into a dungeon that had a dragon in it. It wasn't a full-grown adult dragon, but we were supposed to fight it. But our group ended up bribing the dragon, because we were really willing. We were surprisingly willing to give up our gold and whatnot. We were just like, what if we just gave you our gold and you let us go? And the dragon was like, okay.
I guess?
Yeah, so, like, our DM was baffled because we were meant to be fighting and killing this dragon, but we ended up just, like, bribing him to leave.
No, I was gonna ask, like, what did you bribe him with? Like, humans?
No, we had like, gems and whatnot on us from, because we had just finished looting this dungeon.
Like,
so
just take it. It was already
like,
here anyway.
I mean, like, this was gravy on top of, we're here for the magic items. Like, we don't need these gems.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I guess to transition a little bit, what are your, well, you said you played PlayStation, and I believe you also mentioned me you started on a Game Boy Color.
Yes. One of my first video games was Pokemon Yellow, and then Pokemon Crystal after that was, like, the next one that I was obsessed with. I've pretty much been following Nintendo's consoles and whatnot.
What do you think of the Switch?
I want the Switch so bad. I do, but I'm super broke. I can't afford it. But
did you hear about, like, the launch, though, that people have been, like, being able to scratch the stuff?
Oh, yeah, that's one of the issues I've heard of, like, the dock scratches the screen when you put it in. Some people have had that problem. Some people have said, no, it's totally fine. What are you talking about? Some people are just like, guys, get a screen protector. It's just, like, a little piece of plastic. Put it over. My manager has a Switch, and I know he loves it so far. He's playing Breath of the Wild, like crazy.
I heard that's pretty good.
I've heard it's super good, and I'm really looking for. Listen, if I get a Switch, it's pretty much just going to be a dedicated Skyrim machine. They're making Skyrim handheld. That's coming out this fall.
Wow.
Yeah. For all the faults of Skyrim, I love that game, and I will play it on handheld until I die.
Yeah, I have a love-hate relationship with the Elder Scrolls. I haven't played Daggerfall, and I haven't played Morrowind, but I really like Oblivion. It's so many dungeons. My problem with, I guess, if I played Daggerfall is that it's randomly generated, so each game is different.
Yeah.
But I think there's also something really cool about that, is that no game is the same, but I'm pretty sure that makes it really tedious.
That unique aspect is definitely pretty fun, but the problem with random generation is, like, weird stuff that's, like, kind of difficult and doesn't make sense can happen also. My problem with Skyrim is that there's just all of these little dungeons and side quests and things. So I'll be traveling somewhere trying to, like, accomplish a quest, and then I'll be like, oh, there's a dungeon over there. I should probably go in there, right? I should, like, maybe I should clean that out because there's bandits in there. And then fast forward 5 hours and I'm, like, halfway through 6 dungeons. I'm like, what was I doing?
Yes. Really easy to get sidetracked.
It's so easy to get sidetracked.
Another problem with Skyrim is, well, it's not really a problem. It's just a pet peeve of mine is, mm-hmm. Whenever the music starts and I can't see the enemy.
Oh, yeah. That just tense moment, like, where is it? Where is it? Oh, God.
I can't see it. Mm-hmm. That happens to me more often than I'd care to admit. And I usually end up dying.
I get so, like, tense and invested in video games. Like, I get really into things where, like, sort of when playing stuff, like, I'll physically tilt and dodge. Like, I'm trying to actually dodge projectiles and stuff. And then afterwards, I'm like, that's not helping. Why am I doing this?
Yeah, that happens to me, too.
Yeah.
And speaking of tense, have you ever had, like, one of those moments in gaming where it just stops your heart?
Yes. No.
That thing for me was when playing Arkham Asylum and mm-hmm. the Joker, like, you get into, like, one of the Scarecrow levels and it looks like the game looks like it's glitching.
Oh, yeah.
That part gave me, I thought, oh, God, it broke. Oh, God, it broke. I think I broke my Xbox.
There's definitely this moment, that moment, like, when you just accomplish something really big and then it looks like something's gone wrong with the game and you're like, no, oh, God, no, please
don't save.
Yeah, and you haven't saved. One game, when I played Mirror's Edge, Mirror's Edge came out, I played that so much, and I got super immersed into that, because it's first person, it's free running, so, like, I'd be sitting on my couch playing PS3, and my heart rate starts going up, because, like, I feel like I'm running, and there's a couple of instances where I have just screwed up, like, I've screwed up a jump and started falling, and I'm just like, ah!
It's really freaky, too, when you do one of those jumps, and it...
Yeah. Oh, it makes me, for a brief second before I remember that it's not real. I don't think I could ever do VR for that reason, because I'm already too into it.
Yeah. Especially, did you see the Resident Evil 7 VR experience?
Yes, I did. The thing is, I get really anxious and really into games when they're, like, fighting games, when I need to accomplish something, but scary games don't bother me. I love horror games. Yeah. My best friend is a giant scaredy cat, and she is terrified of them, but she watches me play them and then crawls into my lap screaming. But I love horror games. They're so fun.
I'd have to agree. I love getting scared. Like, I've noticed whenever I watch horror movies, I don't really get scared by them. I remember watching Paranormal Activity and thinking, this isn't scary at all.
Yeah.
But that's not the fun of it. The fun of it is actually being scared. And I've noticed when playing Silent Hill, that's usually the one game that usually gets me.
Silent Hill is really good. I don't get scared. It's that feeling of, like...
The atmosphere is great.
The atmosphere is really great.
That's what makes it work.
That sort of, like, feeling of tension and anxiety, in a way, is really cathartic. Because, like, once you've succeeded in something, you have that big release of all that tension. And you're just kind of like, yes, I am victorious. I beat the thing. It's so great.
Yeah, I've noticed that there really aren't that many horror games that I've been, wanting to play. Mm-hmm. Besides, I know that the P.T. trailer. I'm
PT,
really disappointed.
P.T. broke my heart.
It really did.
I could go on about how excited I was for P.T. It had, so it was Kojima.
Norman Reedus.
Guillermo del Toro. It was Norman Reedus.
And Guillermo del Toro.
I love Norman Reedus so much.
It was have to agree.
Guillermo del Toro. It was Hideo Kojima. It was like this perfect storm of everything that I wanted in a video game.
Or a horror video game.
And then it got canceled.
Yeah. I'm still disappointed.
I'm broken about it, though I'm really excited for Death Stranding.
I haven't heard about that.
Oh, you don't know? Okay, so literally, so Kojima left Konami. There was like the big controversy with that. All the drama. He started his own, game company, and basically they're making what Silent Hills would have been.
Oh!
It's called Death Stranding. No one knows what it actually is. There's, like, really weird conceptual trailers and stuff, and Kojima will go up on stage and he'll talk about, like, we're doing all of this stuff with, like, interconnection, and it doesn't explain anything about the game. We don't even know what genre it is.
I hope it's, like, horror.
It probably is.
Hopefully, like, psychological.
Based on what the stuff we've seen, but Norman Reedus is in it. He's one of the the main playable character. Guillermo del Toro is not only in it producing, he's in the game. They put him in it. And, like, Mads Mikkelsen is in it. The dude from everything now.
Yeah.
Everybody's in this game. And I am so excited for it. I know nothing about it, but I want it so badly.
To be honest, I have to imagine it has a really big budget.
Oh, it's probably, like, I think investors are just throwing money at Kojima at this point.
Yeah, I hope it doesn't turn out like Mass Effect Andromeda.
From what I've seen with, like, they're doing more mocap than they are with, like, just straight computer-generated animation. Yeah. So it'll probably, I don't fear the graphics or anything.
Oh, I don't really care about graphics, but if you notice, like, the animations are really strange. And the dialogue is really stilted.
The dialogue is really weird for Andromeda.
I'm sorry, my face is tired. That was gross.
My only fear with Kojima is that the game's going to come out and it's going to make no freaking sense. And not because there isn't a plot and there isn't a thought behind it. It's because it's so weirdly granular and specific that no one understands what's going on. But I feel like it will still be fun.
Yeah, hopefully it doesn't get stuck in development hell like Duke Nukem Forever. Like, I think there are parts of Duke Nukem Forever that would have been good. Mm-hmm. Like, the puzzles are surprisingly have a little bit of depth to them, and the combat's not too bad. But it was stuck in, like, development for such a long time that at one point they just, like, okay. And they scrapped it so many times.
Mm-hmm.
So,
I think I have high hopes for it. It's literally, like, that's the game that I am the most looking forward to coming out.
Yeah, I just hope they don't disappoint.
It's
No Man's Sky.
Cough, cough, No Man's Sky. I was also pretty hyped for No Man's Sky, but I actually I wasn't too disappointed by it. I think because I was expecting it to be just like that sort of resource gathering simulator that it was.
Yeah, and at one point, I think people's expectations were so low, it just like, we have nowhere to go but up from here.
Yeah.
So.
Yep.
Yeah. I'm also similarly disappointed in Arkham Knight.
I actually haven't played Arkham Knight.
The combat's not bad, but they place too much of an emphasis on the Batmobile.
Mm.
And you have to get, like, unlock all the Riddler trophies to get the real ending.
Oh, that's unfortunate.
Yeah, I'm not too bad. Like, I'm not too miffed about everything else besides the ending thing.
Mm-hmm.
That's just what gets me. It's like, I like the Riddler. He's my favorite Batman villain. But that is not that's, I was like, I'm kind of dumb, so I don't think I can do all of that. And also, there's too many of them.
What really annoys me is any game that requires you to do, like, multiple fetch quests, where it's like, oh, fetch quests. Find all of these things around the world. I can understand those being, like, extra collectible things, or maybe it's, like, a little mini side quest that's not necessary.
But if you make it so that it's required to get an ending, that's a little different.
It's really frustrating, because, like, those things are tedious to do.
Yeah. Dragon Age Inquisition.
I'm playing that right now, actually. One of my friends is obsessed with that game, and she's like, you have to play it. I'm like, okay.
So, I like Inquisition, mm-hmm. and I'm a really big fan of, like, BioWare and the Dragon Age series.
Right.
Sequel to, spiritual successor to Baldur's Gate. I'd hop on that. So I really like Origins.
Mm-hmm.
Alistair is great. Severin is great. Everyone is great. But I didn't play Dragon Age 2 because it's really... I can't even voice how my disappointment in Dragon Age 2.
Aw, that's too bad.
Inquisition actually is pretty good, but there's too many fetch quests, mm-hmm. and it's really long, which is not bad. I like long games.
Right.
But it's just, there's just too many fetch quests.
I just, every person I know who plays it is obsessed with it. Like, all my friends who've played it are utterly obsessed with that game. So I feel like when, because I'm similar in personality to my friends, obviously, I feel like when the day comes that I get to that, I will just live in that game.
Oh,
I will
yeah.
be absorbed by it.
Oh yeah. I played it at least 5 times.
Oh jeez.
I romanced Dorian all those times. I tried romancing Solas. No, actually I romanced Solas once.
All right.
Yeah.
Mixing it up.
Yeah. Mixing it up, but every other time I just romanced him, Dorian. other than that, no, I got really involved in that game.
Mm-hmm.
So if I was still playing it, I'm usually get really into Inquisition, and especially Origins, so.
Nice.
Yeah, so, wow,
Got absorbed in the video game
talk. I guess speaking of video games, are there any pet peeves you have about any video games, or just any games in general?
Games in general, I mean, there are, but as soon as you ask me that, I can't think of any. It's, like, fetch quests is definitely a thing I'm not a big fan of. There was one... Okay, so this is probably the one, like, anger about video games I will take to my grave, and it's about a very specific video game. It's about Final Fantasy VII Crisis Core, the handheld PSP game sequel/prequel to Final Fantasy VII. The game... Spoilers. The story ends with you... Your character dies in a big fight. You have to fight, like, this giant army, and the army, like, eventually overwhelms you and kills you. It's you versus 1,000 soldiers. But one of the side quests in the game is to fight 1,000 soldiers. So it's like...
So you can do it.
One of the side quests, it's super hard, but because it's, like, it's meant to be, like, an endgame side quest. By the time you get to it, you've literally done every other side quest. This is, like, the developers are like, yeah, why not? Let's give them, like, a trial run of how the end of the game's gonna go. But I was so ridiculously overpowered by the time I reached that I beat that side quest. It took me solid 15 minutes of just, like, sitting on a couch, killing soldiers one by one as they ran up to me. But I killed all 1,000 of them. I did not, like, get down below half health once. But then the end of the game came.
You do the same thing you already did.
Exactly. I did the same thing, but I was forced to die by the narrative. The narrative makes you die. You can't win the game. It's how the story ends. And that infuriated me, because I'm like, no, I know I can do this. I have done this before. I should be able to win. Screw your story. I want to win.
Yeah. I hate, like, stuff that forces, like, if... I guess it's not too bad, because I understand having a narrative, and you have a specific story to tell.
Mm-hmm.
But if it's, like, such a glaring issue that it's like something you've already done in game that obviously your character would be able to do anyway.
Yeah. And that's sort of both in video games and in tabletop, when the narrative means you have to lose, when the narrative, like, dictates that you have to lose a fight, it can't be obvious that the narrative's forcing it.
Yeah.
It has to be the subtle. Fight either has to be so difficult it's impossible for you to win, or you have to be somehow nerfed in a way that makes it so that you can't in this moment win against the enemy. If you're just like, oh, it's like Deus Ex Machina, you just lose.
Yeah.
It's like, what's the point of that? That's so frustrating, because you shouldn't have to lose. You know you can win this fight. Why are you losing? So, like, that's one of my big peeves for tabletop also. I've had some DMs that really put you on the rails with their narrative. And, like, if we will go up against fights we're supposed to lose or run away from, but we actually are capable of beating the enemy, and we know we're capable of beating the enemy. And you can see the look on the DM's face when they're like, oh, I need to think of something that makes them lose. And then they just make something up where the monster, like, suddenly there's another monster, or the monster gets away or something. It's so annoying.
Yeah, as a DM, that's one of my, like, that you have to be have room to be flexible.
Exactly.
All right. And I guess my one last question for you is, if do you have any guilty pleasures
in as terms far of as
video games?
As far as video games go, I don't feel really guilty about my pleasures. I only play one character in Overwatch. Maybe I should feel guilty about that. I've only ever played Junkrat in Overwatch.
Oh my
God. I kind of have a soft spot in my heart for the, like, the visual novel dating sims. Not a lot of them, but I've played Hotiful Boyfriend more.
I was actually thinking about that.
Hotiful Boyfriend. I have dated more pigeons than a person should.
I've dated more pigeons than I've dated people. So.
Listen, you do it.
Yeah.
Believe in yourself.
Believe. All right. So that's it for today, folks. Feel free to join me next week here at kpcradio.com for another foray into the wondrous world of gaming. This is Hannah Ward signing off.